Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode of Long Night with Vish Khanna was recorded on Friday, April 10th, 2015.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Long Night at the Transact for the Spur Festival. How's your Spur Festival going so far? Nice. I'm very honored that we were asked to bring our show here. I have to confess, prior to the invitation, I had not heard of the Spur Festival, and I felt really ignorant about that because it seems amazing. But then when I talked to people I know from Toronto and I'd say, hey, do you know about the Spur Festival? Literally everyone responded with, I'm sorry, what'd you say? There's a sperm festival now? Who's playing that? Kendrick Lamar? Is Kendrick Lamar playing that? K-Dot's playing all the festivals. I'm actually in a really good mood because I just discovered my new favorite place to go for delicious cappuccinos, and they're only $1.99. The name of this place? Costco. It's always a bad sign when you order something from someone and their response to your order is shock. Like, I walked up to the woman working at the Costco commissary and she didn't even look at me. She was just like staring at her cash register, you know, and she said, not even looking at me, she's like, can I help you? And I said, yeah, I'll have a cappuccino. And her head exploded. She was like, what? And then she kind of looked me up and down, and then she kind of looked behind her to the side to where I presume the seldom used Costco cappuccino machine
sort of resides. And she just, all she said to me when she looked back at me was, "That'll be 7 minutes." When someone in the service industry tells you how long the thing that you asked for is going to take, unprompted, what they're really telling you is they don't want to help you with that thing. They're hoping you will leave, basically. "That'll be 7 minutes" is the equivalent of like, "Jesus, man, I don't want to make that crap for you. Can you just leave me alone, please?" I used to work at a place and the food options weren't that great. And so as a treat, every Friday, I would walk down to the mall for exercise, and I would visit one of our Canadian pizza chains. Now, in the course of telling this story, I don't want to say anything that offends them or, you know, subjects me to any litigation. So I'm not going to divulge their full name. But for the purposes of this story, let's call them Pizza Pizza Pizza. Okay? So once a week, I would go to Pizza 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 because they had this gourmet line of pizzas. And one of them was called the Pesto Amore. Does anyone remember the Pesto Amore? No one. That's good. You're a good, healthy eating crowd. I like the Pesto Amore. It had roasted red peppers. It had pesto, goat cheese, and spinach. And, you know, as far as pizzas goes, it wasn't that bad. But every time I ordered it, I got a little bit of attitude. I gather that it was a bit difficult for them to make this particular kind of pizza. So sometimes I'd go and they'd be sold out and I'd say, "Can you make another Pesto Amore?" And they'd be like, "Ugh, well, it'll be at least 7 minutes." And I'd go, "That's fine. I don't have a lot going on with my life. I can wait. That's fine." One time I went and they didn't have any. And I said, "Can you make another Pesto Amore?" And the guy went, "No, we're not making those today." I went, "Oh, what? Why not?" He's like, we're out of spinach." I went, "Oh, that's a bummer. Well, I can just go to the grocery store and get a bag of spinach for you guys. No skin off my nose. I really want the pizza." And, you know, wisely, the kid was like, "We don't just take spinach off the street and put it on our pizza and give it to everybody. That's weird." So I was so perturbed by this that I walked out of the Pizza Pizza Pizza. And there's a payphone in the mall. Does anyone remember what a payphone is? Older crowd. That's great. I get on the payphone and I call the Pizza 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 hotline, which takes you to a call center, not the location. And I say, order a medium Pesto Amore, and I want to pick it up at the mall. And the woman goes, "Great, that'll be ready in 20 minutes, sir." And I went, "Are you sure? It's not going to be any problems, complications with this order? You sure about this?" She's like, "No, be fine, 20 minutes, you can pick it up." Walk around the mall for 20 minutes. Walk back into the Pizza Pizza. All of the employees see me as I walk in. They're all ashamed. Their heads are hanging down. I go up to the counter. It's the same kid. And he's there, dejected. And I go, "I'm here for the medium Pesto Amore." And he goes, "Yes, sir. I'm sorry. We had the spinach." And I extended my arms to the boy. I put my hands on his shoulders and I said, "I know you did, son. I know you did." Then the little piece of shit wanted to charge me for the pizza. Can you believe this? I didn't pay for that pizza, ladies and gentlemen. I grabbed that medium pizza. I sat down on a table. I ate the whole thing staring at every employee in that place. That's right. I'm a hero. A pizza hero. Thank you. I don't know if it was the vintage of the Parmesan or the Spite, but that was a good pizza. Good mix of stuff. Hey, I have a 4-year-old boy. Thank you very much. He's great. And he recently wrote a great joke. Do you guys want to hear a joke that my son wrote? Yeah. One person? Thank you very much. Here's the joke. It involves crowd participation, so let's all get ready for this. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Wait, has he told you this joke? You guys heard this joke already? Okay, let's try this again. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
The chicken.
The chicken who?
The chicken who crossed the road. Do you see what my son did with that joke? He took the "why did the chicken cross the road" joke, turned it into a knock, knock joke. That is comedic efficiency. In fact, none of you are aware of it, but my son just saved us all 7 minutes. Hey, we got a great show for you tonight, ladies and gentlemen. We have an excellent show for you. We have great guests. Rachel Giza, journalist Rachel Giza is here. We have a new novelist, a brand new novelist. What does that mean? Well, she just put out her first novel. It's coming out this month. Sabrina Ramnanan is here as well from Ontario. All the way from Washington, D.C., Daniel Shulman is here. Dan Shulman, how about a hand for him? And we have a performance by Lee Reed, who, by the way, is celebrating his record release tonight in Hamilton right after this show. That is dedication. Now, before I... we're going to take a break in a second. Did anyone here mention to you that we're about to play a game that involves a couple of audience members? Did anyone... I feel like... Did you mention it, Michael?
I forgot.
Okay, we need a man and a woman, and then again, a man and a woman. We need two pairs of men and women. We're going to take a commercial. Does anyone want to... You're raising your hands? Okay, Owell is going to gather you up. Not literally. He's going to gather you up for the game, and then we'll play the game after this commercial break. Say hello to the Bicycles. Thanks for being here, everybody. It's nice to see you. This week, the Bookshelf Cinema is screening Still Alice, It Follows, Seymour, An Introduction, and more. This week at the E-Bar, the Galacticats, Fast Romantics, and Torero play a show on Friday, April 17th. And on Sunday, April 19th at Harcourt United Church, Michael Harris reads from Party of One about Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper and this country's radical makeover. Bookshelf is an independently owned culture hub located at 41 Quebec Street in Guelph. For more information about their hours, listings, blogs, and accessibility, please visit bookshelf.ca. Back, we're back at Long Night, everybody. How you doing? How you doing, Spur Festival? You good? Nice to see you. All right, are we all set? Okay. Now, the name of the game, we're going to meet our contestants in just a moment. We're going to pair you off so that you're competing against one another. I like to do man versus woman because I'm old-fashioned. I'm not really that old-fashioned. I don't know why. We just like to do that. Okay, so the name of the game is Celebrity Impressions on the Spot. Celebrity Impressions on the Spot. And the way the game works is we're going to draw names from this hat, and we're going to do our best to do an impression of the person based on our recognition of the name. So you can capture... Ideally, it's a vocal impression. We actually need microphones for these people, if we have any. Owell's going to get you one. James, you can have this one. We'll meet this gentleman first. What's your name, sir?
Mark.
Mark, nice to meet you. Where are you from?
Thornhill.
Thornhill. Really? Cheers for Thornhill. What's it like in Thornhill?
Oh, it's a beautiful town.
Okay. Well, that's why people are cheering. That's great. What do you do, Mark?
Several different jobs.
Okay. Very secretive. That's fine. That's great. And what's your name? Heather. Heather, thank you very much for being here. Heather, where are you from?
Ottawa. Oh,
are you here for the Spur Festival from Ottawa?
Yes.
Did anything in particular bring you here?
Yeah, to speak.
Oh, you're speaking.
Yeah, I spoke last night.
We got a speaker up here, ladies and gentlemen. Heather, how did your talk go?
It went well, thank you.
What was the subject?
Alone Together.
Alone Together, that sounds very nice. All right, well, Mark and Heather, you're going to face each other in this contest, and the winner receives a complimentary Long Night with Vish Khanna mug. Now, mine says host, yours will not. Yours will say guest. So, why don't we get... Mark, you're holding the microphone. Heather, do you mind drawing a name from this hat? Okay, now you want me to... Yeah, I'll take it. I'll take it. Okay, here we... Oh, man, we had this once before. You need to do an impression of a tornado. Well, Mark just stepped right in there. Wow. How about a hand for Mark, everybody? I feel like Mark was waiting to do that impression his entire life. That's amazing. Nice job. All right, Heather, same deal. Oh, I neglected to mention, because we're a little disorganized, by we're going to pick the winner by show of applause. So when you're done, we'll poll the audience. So, Heather, it's up to you now to do your impression of a tornado. There is actually some pressure. I was going to say no pressure, but you saw what Mark did, so good luck.
I'm not in Kansas anymore.
Very well done. Heather kicking it up a notch. That's interesting. All right. All right, by show of applause, who thinks that Mark had the best tornado? All right. And what about Heather? I think that Mark won. Okay, Mark, congratulations. Thank you for playing the game. You win a mug. Oh, well, we'll give it to you. Heather, if you can pass the microphone on, that would be great. Oh, there's your mug right there in handy box form. Thank you very much. All right. There we go. Well, that was fun. A tornado. All right, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Samantha.
Hi, Samantha. Where are you from?
I am from the States. I'm from Philadelphia.
Oh, cool. What brings you here to speak, I presume?
I'm one of the public fellows. And I go to school at the Monk School of Global Affairs. So, yeah, that's what I'm doing in Toronto.
Oh, nice. Well, welcome to Toronto. Sure.
From Philadelphia. Yeah.
And what's your name?
My name's Carl.
Carl? Yes. And what do you do, Carl?
I am retired. I've been a counselor, marriage counselor, for many decades. And now I'm not.
In Toronto?
In Toronto, yeah.
So which mayors did you work with?
Not those kinds of counselors.
Oh, okay. I think I understand. Not very bright on the uptake. Okay. All right. So we have Samantha, Carl. Okay, so we're going to draw the name here. And Carl, why don't you do it? Choose your fate here. I'm going to read it to make sure it's legit. Okay, here we go. The Ultimate Warrior. Are you familiar with The Ultimate Warrior?
No.
Okay, and you, Samantha?
I just thought it was a Ultimate Warrior.
A fair assessment. I think based on the fact that you don't know, neither of you... Okay, let's try someone else. Something else. All right, this time Samantha. Oh, this is interesting. Amy Winehouse. That's a hard one. That is a hard one. Is there any way you, either of you... Do you know who Amy Winehouse is? Excellent, then we're going to play. All right, so who wants to go first here, Carl or Samantha? You guys know any Amy Winehouse? No, we don't know any Rehab? Okay, that's fine. All right, Carl, you've got the microphone. Just do your best. Everybody, give him a round of applause and show us support.
No, I'm sorry. I can't do Amy Winehouse. I know who she is.
Do you know any songs?
No.
Okay.
I mean, only randomly.
Okay.
And I cannot sing.
Well, if you could capture her essence in just a sentence, what would you say? What do you think Amy Winehouse would say if she were alive, first of all, and yes, also on stage?
It was a mistake. It shouldn't have happened.
Very nice. How about a hand for Carl? Okay. I think that's adequate. That's good. All right, Samantha. You want me to hold the... She's a singer, so you need the microphone, don't you? Oh, wow. So this is for a podcast as well, so I'm just going to do a play-by-play here. Samantha is tying up her hair in an Amy Winehouse style. Behind it looks pretty good. And do you need the microphone now? And okay.
This is what I got. I'm not a very good singer. But you guys want to help?
Is this the impression?
I gotta go to rehab.
Very good. That's just...
Go,
yeah.
Go.
All right. All right. I think that we're going to have to do a little poll here now. Who thinks Carl won the Amy Winehouse? You're a good crowd. You're a kind audience. Who thinks Samantha won? All right. Samantha, congratulations.
Thank you.
You win yourself a mug. James has it for you. It's encased in cardboard for easy transportation.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for playing this round of Celebrity Impressions on the Spot. Carl Smith, how about a hand for all our contestants? We are going to take a quick break, and when we return, Rachel Giza will join us. Thank you very much. Yeah. you enjoy the Creative Control podcast and want to support it with a monthly pledge, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol. That's patreon.com/creativecontrol with two Ks. You can pledge $1 a month or $4, $8, $30, $50, $100 a month, whatever you want. There are gifts and incentives to pledge, but more than anything, you can keep the show going. There's no other revenue stream for this podcast. I've been doing it for my own fulfillment and to contribute something to the culture. But I think it's time to see if I can generate some kind of salary from all of this work. So, if you appreciate Creative Control, again, please consider pledging a monthly amount. All of the info you need is at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thank you. I thought we were back, but there we are. We're back on Long Night, everybody. Hello. Nice to see you all. Ladies and gentlemen, I was just going to say, how about another round of applause for our contestants and celebrity impressions on the spot? I got to say, that was a tough round. James Keast is my sidekick. How about a hand for James Keast?
Thanks for having me. I feel like we're taking the show on the road. It's like a road game.
It is. We moved right across town. We normally do this show November to March as part of the Long Winter Festival at the Great Hall. And it's nice to be out of a basement in a nice... The band likes it. It's nice to be here. It's very nice to be here. We're very honored that we get to be here at the Spur Festival. So thank you for having us. And as I say, we have a good show. I think that we should bring out our first guest. Do you have anything else you want to say about the contest or anything? I know you don't like it.
No, I thought it was good.
Okay. Our first guest is a National Magazine Award-nominated journalist who was a senior editor at The Walrus and a deputy editor at The Grid. She's also worked for CBC and guest-hosted radio programs like Q and Day 6. Please put your hands together for Rachel Gitza. Hi, Rachel. How are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you.
Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you guest hosted Q.
Yeah, you're going to go right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to go right there.
Well, you guest hosted during their search for a new host, which I found that all very exciting and fascinating. What was the experience like for you?
I had worked at Q in the fall before the fall, so I was one of the essay writers for the opening essay writers for Gion. So I had sort of been around when that had happened, and then got brought back to guest host. So it was I found it fascinating as well, that process of, looking for a host.
Do you have a broadcasting background per se?
A little bit of one. I've worked in television, I've worked in radio, worked in print,
Okay, yeah. So I worked on Q for a little bit, and well before the fall, and I don't know, I just found that, like, did you feel like you were auditioning for that job?
It was pretty clear they didn't want me for the job, so I think I was a bit of a warm body for a period of time, because I think what they wanted... I think that they wanted somebody who, I'm a journalist, and I think what they wanted was someone who was a comedian or a performer or an artist.
Right.
And so I think that there was a whole bunch going on behind the scenes, and then there were a bunch of us that were there who were, filling in and at the CBC. So
did you want the job?
I was interested in the job, but it wasn't something that there were lots of times when I was there, it just felt like I kind of had snuck in. It felt a little bit like there was going to be like a hook that was going to pull me out of Studio Q.
You felt like an imposter vaguely.
Yeah. I mean, it was a really weird time, because I don't think any Canadian media institutions had been rocked the way they had been rocked by what happened Gion. So I think that people, and then there was a change up top, there were all these layoffs happening at the CBC, so I think it was a really weird time to be there. And I think that the producers were all, they were great, they were amazing, and amazing professionals, but I think that they just felt under the spotlight and exhausted, and it was a really weird.
I didn't
time.
Really envy anyone in your position. Okay, first of all, I kind of wanted that job. Secondly, I didn't envy anyone in those guest host positions. It just didn't.
Yeah.
Even the and I knew because working as a producer on that show, like to have to, you end up writing in the voice of the host, and so just constantly have this parade of new people coming in.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, I imagine they just threw up their hands and just...
Well, and also nobody, like, this is a thing. Most of my experience recently has been working at home by myself as a freelancer. So suddenly to be in the public eye and to have people assess you in that kind of way was something. It's really weird. And, you know, people would, and just sort of, you know, and I really didn't, I mean, people were generally kind or they just didn't care about me. So I sort of either got crickets or people being kind of pleasant.
How many, did you do a week or 2 weeks?
I did 2 weeks.
2 weeks, that's more than a lot of people did.
Yeah. Again, I think that they just didn't know I was there. They just kept forgetting that I was in the seat and they just kept handing me questions. And guests would come in.
No, I'm
so
sure that's
I think
not the case.
That I think that it was my first experience of just, you know, people actually, you know, weighing in on, I don't like your voice, or I don't like the way you laugh, or I didn't like the way you asked that question.
Wait, in public or like the
meetings?
Like
comments or on Twitter or, you know.
That's
and
weird.
I think there were also people who would, you know, there were lots of people that were still really mad about what happened.
Right.
And so people who felt like the show had been sullied or there was no way to ever fix it or... so it was a very weird, it was great. I mean, I'm grateful and it was lots of fun and I love interviewing people, but it was a weird.
It was strange.
It was, you know, I think a lot of people were really sad. I think it was a really, you know, I think people felt under scrutiny and I think they felt worried about their jobs.
Yeah.
They felt worried about what was happening. So, yeah.
What did you make of their decision to hire Shad?
I think Shad's amazing. I think that he's he is smart and funny and warm and I think that, you know, he's got this lovely ease. And I think that people there are really excited about him. Yeah. I don't know him, but
he's a friend of mine. He's actually honestly one of the best people I've met in this Canadian music industry. Like,
yeah.
Nicest, hardest working,
absolutely.
Smartest. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that you know, I've heard from some of the producers there who talk about the fact that he's this like lovely, calming presence, that he actually has brought this sense of leadership and calm, and I think that that's what people there need.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I still wanted that job. Last year...
Well, you're a friend. Maybe you could...
No,
you know,
no.
Maybe they need a co-host or... You know,
I did meet with them, but anyway, I'm here. I'm doing the show. It's fine.
I feel. Do you want to talk some more about that?
No, because, I don't. Actually, I do want to move on. Yeah,
okay.
Sorry. You were on the show. I'm fascinated.
You could have.
I mean, for this country, it's like if you guest host, it's not the same. But if you were like on Letterman, I'd be like, dude, you were on Letterman. That's crazy. Like, that's a big talk show. So.
Yeah. No. It was. Great.
This is a small talk show. I'm just curious.
I would have chosen you too. I don't know why they didn't have you. I don't know. You're very lovely.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. No, you're
that.
Very lovely.
No.
I would have had you there too. See. See.
For those listening on the podcast, the applause sign went up. So, last year, The Walrus published a widely read piece of yours called The Talk.
Yeah.
And it's this revealing account of the evolution of sex education and gender studies, particularly as it relates to young men. First of all, what compelled you to explore this? It's very interesting.
Yeah. I think in part, I've got an 11-year-old son. So, in part, it was, you know, raising a boy at a time when... people are talking about, you know, rape culture and consent and you know, raising good young men and how do we talk to boys about sex and how do we talk to boys about these kinds of issues. And so I was curious. And also just the question of sex ed. I mean, I'm very pro-sex ed in our schools.
Yeah.
But it's a really, I mean, not so much in Canada, but certainly in the U.S., it's a, you know, enormous wedge issue. And I found out about this program in Calgary called Wise Guys, where a group of young guys in their 20s, go in and work with boys who are in grade 9 and spend an entire year teaching them sex ed And it's not just sex ed, but it's about, you know, as one of the boys put it to me, it's about how not to be a jerk. So it's basically a program in teaching young men about better communication, improving friendships, consent, you know, porn literacy. So it's...
Relating to homosexual lifestyles, relating to people in a way beyond...
Well, it was... I mean, one of the things that came out of it was... So there's this... it's kind of like, you know, the sort of Calgary's version of, like, Planned Parenthood, the Calgary Sexual Health Center. And they had been around for 30 years, and they realized that they didn't actually have any programming for men. Mm-hmm. And so they thought it was, you know, and they realized that as much as they'd seen teenage pregnancy rates go down, but they had seen sexually transmitted infections go up. So they realized that there was something that was missing. And the thing that was missing was they weren't talking to boys. And any sex ed experts will say that young heterosexual males are the most overlooked demographic when it comes to talking candidly and frankly and about sex. So there's this group in Calgary that does this, that engages young men in these, and you know, it's not the kind of sort of hectoring conversation where it's saying to these young boys, like, you're bad and you're wrong, and it's more talking to them about, you know, this is, it actually talks to them, and it talks to them very honestly about sex and sexuality.
Yeah. So. And was that your primary takeaway from this investigation, is that there are these inroads being made with these... I mean, this is one group in Calgary. Yeah. Did you find that this was going on across the country or elsewhere?
No. I mean, the thing is, it's not happening elsewhere. You know, it's interesting. There was a story in, I think, the New York Times magazine a couple weeks ago about a program like this in the U.S. in a small you know, it's a paid program, so it's mm-hmm. like an extracurricular program that people could pay for. But it was interesting because it was happening in light of the curriculum changing here, the curriculum changing in Ontario. And I think it had been, I can't remember now off the top of my head, but I mean, the sex ed curriculum in Ontario hadn't changed for over 10 years. So you had teachers trying
Since 1998, wasn't it?
Yes, and maybe so longer. Yeah. So, you know, that predated, you know, smartphones in schools.
Right.
So I think that it was trying to talk to kids about sex that didn't take any context of their lives in. And so, you know, we'd seen the cases in Steubenville, we'd seen the case with Rataya Parsons, and it's like, how do you actually talk to kids about how to behave responsibly sexually in a way that wasn't like abstinence, in a way that wasn't like telling kids just not to have sex?
Yeah, the incidents you're describing involve sexual assaults, and a lot of what I took away from what was going on in Calgary with Wise Guys was a lot of it's about respect. Self-respect and respecting others. And I don't think that was actually brought up when I was a kid. Somebody just sit.
I swear to God, the eyes wide shut.
James. We put on our masks.
Yeah, it was the eyes wide shut moment of the show.
Tom Cruise walks in.
I was trying to have a nice solemn moment and someone butt pianoed, clearly. In your piece, you mentioned that Middlesex University of England released a report entitled, basically, .. porn is everywhere.
Yes. And basically, it is.
Yeah. I want to ask, we were kind of touching upon this. How do you suppose the internet has impacted sexualization and sex ed for young people? I think the answer is probably pretty obvious, except that the relationship between porn and sex education is what you kind of delve into. It's a
right. Well, I think that porn has supplanted sex education for a lot of young people. So I think the access that kids have to images, and not just sort of, you know, straight up porn, but just the fact that pop culture in general has loosened up a lot.
Yeah.
And so stuff that was available.
Video games, everything. Yeah.
And I think that, you know, like when I was growing up, maybe it was probably saying when you were growing up, you know, maybe somebody's dad had a Playboy lying around and that's what you would see. And that's a completely different terrain for kids now. And so there was this massive survey of research about the impact of porn on kids that was done in England as part of a bigger project about child exploitation. So these were people who were looking to find out bad stuff about porn. They couldn't find anything conclusive that said, you know, porn is, you know, poisoning the minds of kids or anything like that. But what they did find was that kids were increasingly turning to porn because adults would not talk to them honestly about sex. So, you know, groups like Wise Guys, which I was really impressed by, don't say to kids, porn is bad. They don't say to these young men, it's terrible, don't look at it, it's awful. They say, okay, so you look at porn, so what do you make of it? Like, do you think that's what girls look like?
Right.
Do you think that's what you'd want? Do you, what do, you know? And so instead of telling boys something is bad, they actually talk. And I think that kids are craving somebody to say to them, so, you know, and also, you know, one of the things that's interesting even about the Ontario sex ed curriculum is that there's still a punitive, like there's still a sort of a, the approach to sex ed is still, here are all the bad, like, so we're going to teach you about sex, but here are all the terrible consequences of sex. Like, this is how you'll get pregnant, you'll get raped, you'll get an STI. And I think that this sex ed program actually says to kids the truth, which is sex is fun and it's fantastic. And that's where it starts. So this is how you can do it responsibly. This is how you can do it respectfully. So that, and I just, there's nothing, there's really very, well, maybe it's not nothing out there, but there's very little else like that out there.
Yeah, no. Now you're working on a book, this article basically, it's going to branch off into a book, so to speak. Can you talk a little bit about what shape the book is taking and what the timeline is on it?
Yeah, so I'm working on a book right now. I'm hoping to have it done early next year. And it's about, it sort of branches off from this. So it's about boyhood and masculinity and the way that boys, like sort of like boys now, think about what it's like to be a man. Because I, you know, in the last, you know, particularly in the last decade, there's been a real revolution in how we think about masculinity and femininity, the roles that men and women have. You know, in lots of ways, this book is a bit of Hannah Rosen came out with a book last 2 years ago, The End of Men and the Rise of Women, about looking at the fact that men and women's fates have changed a lot. And I was sort of curious about, you know, what it's like. And I'm raising an 11-year-old boy, so I'm curious about, you know, when he thinks about what he's going to grow up and what his life is going to look like and what it means to be a man, what is that? Because it feels like so many of the old rules are out the window.
Well, it does seem like the death of the single white male is upon us, if that makes any sense. No offense, single white. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Where's the gloomy piano now? But it does...
Yeah.
I think there are single white men talking about this. Like, it's difficult to be a single white male all of a sudden. And... I think that's great, but a lot of them aren't really keen about it.
Well, I think that it's, yeah, I mean, I think that the conversation has been framed as a zero-sum game, and I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that any time somebody who's had a lot of power and other people start to have more power as well, they've got to give up some of that power. And I also think, though, when you think about... So I think a lot of the conversation about, you know, the kind of hand-wringing and the pearl-clutching about, you know, boys are failing in schools because schools are too feminized, I'm not as concerned about that. But I do think that we've seen, you know, particularly, like, when I think about, like, the many ways in which, you know, you can see what's happening...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Not just in the U.S., but here in Toronto with carding, the kinds of, you know, young men of color who are disproportionately targeted by police. You know, boys are disproportionately suspended and expelled at school more so than girls, particularly young men of color. So there are lots of very legitimate ways that boys are, a particular class of boys, are being, you know, left behind. And I'm sort of curious about what the fates of those boys are.
Well, it's very fascinating. I can't wait to read this book. Everyone here can follow Rachel Giza on Twitter at Rachel A. Giza, and it's Rachel, you know how to spell Rachel, A, the letter A, and then Giza is G-I-E-S-E.
Exactly right.
Which is, what is that? What is the origin of your name?
My dad's German.
German?
Yes.
All right. Rachel, thank you so much for being on the show. Rachel Giza, everyone.
Thank you.
After these messages, we'll be right back with Sabrina Ramanan. Stay where you are. Thank you very much.
The 32nd Annual Hillside Festival takes place July 24th, 25th, and 26th at Guelph Lake, rain or shine, featuring performances by Astral Swans, Bad Bad Not Good, Badminton Racket, Baskery, Battle of Santiago, Braids, The Brothers Landreth, Bulgarian Voices Trio, By Divine Right, Tim Chasen, Nels Klein Singers, Constantines, Nick Crane, Alex Cuba, Daka Braka, Del Bell, Daldrums, Echo Deck, Darren Edens, Eloquent, Etiquette, Nick Ferrio, Jeremy Fisher, Frazee Ford, David Francie, The Good Lovelies, Great Lakes Swimmers, Ash Grunwald, Hungai, The Henrys, Suzanne Jarvie, Mo Kenny, The Cramdens, Daniel Lanois, Last X, Lee Reed, Lids, Look Vibrant, Leluc, Minotaurs, Moonface, The Once, Nancy Pants, Doug Paisley, Fred Penner, Perch Creek, Poor Man's Whiskey, Natalie Prass, The Spring Standard, Jamie Stone's Lomax Project, Sultans of String, Team, Thus Owls, Tribecistan, Riley Walker, The Weather Station, Jason Wilson and Pee Wee Ellis, and more to be announced. For more information about purchasing tickets to this accessible event, please visit hillsidefestival.ca.
We're back on the show. We've hit a couple of bumps and bruises in this new venue. James, do you have a mic yet? Oh, man. I came back from the commercial a bit early. Oh, well, do we have a microphone for James? It's weird that my sidekick doesn't have a microphone. Max is into it in the audience. Yeah, I don't know. All right, we'll get James a microphone. I'm going to introduce our next guest, who is an Ontario-based author who won the 2012 Marina Nimmat Award via the University of Toronto School of Continuing Education Creative Writing Program, and her work has appeared in journals known for presenting post-colonial and diasporic perspectives. Her debut novel is out this month via NOF. It's called Nothing Like Love, and we're happy she could be here with us tonight. Please say hello to Sabrina Ramanan, everybody. All right, Sabrina, nice to see you here. How's it going?
Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Congratulations on your new book.
Thank you.
This is a rather complex... I wrote Shakespearean. Does that bother you that I wrote that? Because white men suck. We decided that earlier. But it's like a Shakespearean love story, I would say.
Somebody else said that.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Was it a white person?
My agent, who is white.
Oh, your agent. All right, there you go. Sorry to make things uncomfortable, but no. No, there's meddling parents, there's star-crossed lovers, there's gossip and conspiracies, and it's primarily set in Trinidad and Tobago, like all of Shakespeare's works. What inspired you to write this book?
Well, I love Trinidad, and I've been traveling to Trinidad for holidays for all my life, actually, and my dad has been telling me these amazing stories about Trinidad all my life. And there's just something so compelling and romantic about the island that I just had to write a book about it.
Were you born in Canada?
I was born in Canada, yeah.
Okay, and your parents are...
They're Trinidadian.
Trinidad, okay. Are your parents here tonight?
They're not here tonight, no.
Okay, no. Are they still in Canada?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were your parents weird?
My parents are very weird, but they're weird and wonderful, as most immigrant parents are.
I thought my parents were weird.
Yeah.
They are weird.
Yeah.
They're kind of always weird. But I couldn't decide if it was a cultural issue... Like, initially, I'm like, oh, they don't understand things because of the culture, but I think they're just weird. Like,
they're probably just weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love them.
Yeah.
But...
Well, I'll give you an example.
Sure. You give me an example. I want to hear about this.
So my mom is obsessed with cleanliness, and she likes to talk about it constantly, but she also travels quite a bit because she's now retired, as my dad is also retired, so they go away quite a bit together. But every time she comes home from a holiday, she... insists on coming over and telling me about how unclean other people's places are or the hotels that she stayed in. And she'll say it like this, Brina, you must make sure your kitchen is clean and you must make sure your bathroom is clean because if people come over and it ain't clean, they could think you're nasty.
Oh, wow. Weird, like I kind of felt like your mother was here all of a sudden. I never met her, but I feel like I know her very well. That was, yeah, that's pretty amazing. Do you feel that certain people seem to have a ceaseless hunger for stories from a foreign or immigrant's perspective? When I say certain people, I mean...
You mean white people.
Yeah. Because I sometimes, you know, over the years, people will be like, hey, Vish, why do you write a book about your family? I'm like, what's your angle here? What do you think it's going to be? Like, they just look at me and I think, they hear, see my name, they're like, what's that guy to write a book? I'm like, you sons of bitches, really? No, do you ever feel like that?
Yeah, because there's something compelling about being exotic, and we are exotic. We bring exotic food.
I'm not that exotic. I'm the whitest person I know.
Well, you look exotic because you have brown skin, and you come from it. Where are you from? You're Indian, right? Oh, should I not have said that?
It's a little racist. No, my parents are from India. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
See? Right? And it's such a rich culture.
They're weird.
And there's so much to learn about that culture, right? And so that's why people are obsessed with stories from other places. I'm also obsessed with stories from other places.
Have you been to Trinidad?
Several times.
Several times.
Yes.
Did you for the book primarily, or did you been?
No, all my life I've been going.
Okay.
Yes, but I did actually go when I was in the middle of writing the novel because I wanted to immerse myself in the culture. Yes.
Okay. Because I've only been to India once.
Oh.
In 1989, I was 12.
You are pretty white then.
Well, I am. I found India to be like Gerrard Street on steroids. That's what I thought the whole time. I'm like, I know this is very familiar, but I don't like it. How do we get out of this neighborhood? That's the whole time I was there.
Really?
I didn't like it. I was 12.
No.
I couldn't wait to get home.
Really?
Sorry.
I find that disappointing.
I am disappointed in myself every day.
When in Rome? When in India?
When in India? I want to go back.
You should. You need to now.
Because I said that.
You just shared this with
public.
Yeah,
I do. I should go back. You're right. You're right. I did, when I called that pizza, 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 I assumed the call was rooted to India. So I do, I'm in touch with them.
Oh, well, that's good.
That's where they go. You guys think? When I was doing my English degrees in university, I always had at least a faint notion that some form of cultural appropriation or tokenism was at play the whole time I was there. To keep my sanity, I relegated this to the back of my mind, because otherwise I'd lose my mind being paranoid. Did you ever feel self-conscious about why some people might want to hear the stories by people like us? Like, I know we just talked about this, but like, you went through school and you've won awards and all this stuff. Did you ever feel weird?
No, I never felt self-conscious about why people wanted to hear stories about me, but I did feel self-conscious about writing, about being an Indo-Caribbean and writing about being an Indo-Caribbean, because I always felt either not Indian enough or not Caribbean enough.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because
you're in this weird
zone. The middle, right. Yeah. It's a bit of a limbo, right? And I always feel like we're not quite accepted in the South Asian community because we don't have the language anymore, right?
I used to have it, and I must have, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're a different case altogether. You should still have the language.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Probably should work on that. Yeah.
But we have generations that are from Trinidad, and so Bhojpuri is gone, which is what is the language that we would have spoken.
Yeah.
And so because of that, we lose status in the South Asian community, and then we're obviously not black, so we don't have we can't identify completely with the Afro Caribbean community.
But you've told this story that's primarily set in the 70s. It's not even your generation.
Right. No, it's not. I wasn't born in the 70s.
Which is interesting, because on some level I assume that these stories are dying. If people like you and I and other people don't write these stories, they're going to die out. And your first foray is to write a book that isn't really about your perspective at all. I mean, it's something you've probably ingrained, but you're writing about a period that you weren't really around for.
Yeah. I wrote about that period because it's the period that my dad told me most of his stories from. And also, I'm also writing about a very tiny village, and time moves slowly in this village. So when I was there in the 80s, it's really like being there in 1974. It's not that, it wasn't that much different at the time. So my experiences are in that book.
Okay.
Also. Yeah.
Okay. How has the book been received among your peers and within your cultural community? It's
really new.
It hasn't
it's
really
only been out for
circulated.
A week. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe no, you have no real sense yet.
Well, my friends like it. I think they have to say they like it, but it's.
Your friends here tonight?
No, but my husband is here, and my publicist is here.
Nice.
And they're both very lovely people, and they like it a lot. Yeah.
You're saying that your publicist likes your book? Is that what you just said?
Yeah. Count.
Put in an awkward position for him if he was trying to shill the book and hated it. Okay. All right.
No, but it's been received very, very well.
No, it's great. I hope people pick it up. But what's next for you beyond this?
Well, I'm working on something else in my mind right now because I don't have a lot of time to write because I'm in
You're
the promoting stage.
Promoting
stages.
The
yeah,
thing,
and I have a little boy at home also, so my time is divided between,
And are you doing other stuff at Spurfest? Or is this it?
No, I'm speaking tomorrow.
I hope to God this isn't it for you.
No, there's Breakfast with Sabrina tomorrow. Come out tomorrow morning at Heart House. Heart House at 9, I think it's at 9 or 9:30.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a book bag with Sabrina, and I'll be doing an interview with Mark Medley and taking questions from the audience and doing some signings. So if you're around tomorrow morning, come out.
This is exciting. I'm glad that this is probably one of the first things like this that you've done, right?
This is the very first thing.
Wow, how about a hand for me? No, it's great.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Once again, Sabrina Ramanan's new book is called Nothing Like Love. It's right here. It's out now via Knopf, and it will be celebrated at a book launch on April 14th at 6:30 p.m. at Rum Corner, which is 926 Dundas Street West. Toronto. I squinted at you like I didn't have the information right in front of me.
Right. I emailed
like, it's
it
written
to you
down,
yesterday.
But I'm just going to pretend I'm from here, you know? But I'm not. You can follow Sabrina on Twitter at Sabrina Ramanan, which is spelled exactly how it sounds, on Twitter. Best of luck with this book, Sabrina. Thank you very much for being on the show. Another hand for Sabrina, everybody.
Thank you.
When we return, Mother Jones senior editor Dan Shulman will be here. Stick around. Thank you very much.
April 18th, United We Stand will send a strong message to Ottawa. The Harper government is trying to ram through Bill C-51. If Bill C-51 becomes law, the federal government can invade your private communications at any time, look at and collect all your stuff without a warrant, and they can share it between different government agencies. They're pushing this anti-terror legislation by whipping up fear of Islam. Knowledgeable Canadians of every political stripe oppose Bill C-51. If you support a Canada where individuals have privacy and governments are held to account, please come, rain or shine, on Saturday, April 18th at 1 p.m. on Carden Street in Guelph in front of Old City Hall. This is a family-friendly, physically accessible event with live music and great speakers. For more information, go to www.stopbillc51.ca and look up Guelph.
Freedom is earned, you see. That's what my daddy gave up.
Welcome back to Long Night, everyone. Welcome back. We are live tonight at the Spur Festival, away from our long winter home base at the Great Hall. It's very nice to be here. James, do you have a mic yet? Oh, yeah, you can use, why don't you use Rachel's? Hi, James.
I'm just here to listen.
Well,
you're,
I wanted...
You're doing a terrific job, Vish.
Thank you.
You should host Q. You're good.
Pretty sure they gave that job to somebody else.
No. Not a white guy, I hope.
No, not a white guy.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, everything's fine.
Yay.
The theme of the night returns. No, James, I wanted to talk to you because we're in a new space. What do you make of all this, Spurf?
It's fun, it's weird, but, you know, there is, the band isn't on stage.
At the other place.
So,
you know the band is on stage tonight, right?
Yes, I can hear them behind
me.
Not
having some kind of stroke.
So it's weird,
yeah, okay.
It's kind of freaking me out.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's nice. Hi, Bicycles, what do you make of all this? Is it good?
Yeah, it's nice to be on stage.
Yeah, it's nice to have you on stage. It's good. I'd like to once again thank the fine people at the Spur Festival for having us here and letting us take this show across town. How about a hand for the people of Spur? We normally do the show November to March at Long Winter, and that's normally all we do, but I do have an announcement. For the second year in a row, Long Night with Vish Khanna will be presented at the Lanya Vanya Festival in St. John's, Newfoundland this month. Yeah. So if you're around, We'll be doing the show on Friday, April 24th at the Eastern Edge Gallery in St. John's. Please don't miss that show. Thank you. Our next guest is the New York Times bestselling author of this book right here, Sons of Wichita, How the Koch Brothers Became America's Most Powerful and Private Dynasty, a biography of the Koch family, which is coming out in paperback this May. He's also a well-respected investigative journalist and a senior editor in the Washington, D.C. Bureau of the left-leaning and highly reputable American magazine, Mother Jones. He is from America. Let's welcome him the way Canadians like to welcome Americans to our country. Put your hands together for Dan Shulman, everybody. Hi, Dan.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's going well.
Now, have you been to Toronto before?
First time, actually.
First time. You got to put that mic up to your chin. That's how we do things in Canada.
That's how you do it? Okay.
We try to talk into the microphones here. It's okay. The thing we picked up from watching your PBS.
We do it differently in the United States.
What's that?
I just said we do it differently in America.
What do you do in the States?
Not.
Just wave it all around? Yeah. So you've never been to Toronto?
First time, yeah.
And? You like it?
I love it. I actually spend a lot of time in the Boston area, and this really reminds me a lot of Boston.
Okay. Yeah. Still got to talk into that mic there. Sorry, I don't mean to keep harping on this. We just want to hear you. Everybody wants to hear you. It's fine. Now, you were just in the news for a dust-up with Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us what happened there. I was very intrigued by this. I like this.
We reported that Bill O'Reilly had been mischaracterizing his war reporting experience. He'd been talking about how he'd been in combat in the Falklands War, when, in fact, he was in Buenos Aires with the rest of the press corps. And his war reporting experience was actually a protest that occurred after the war had ended. And then after that, there were a lot of other stories that came out about him misstating his reporting experiences in El Salvador, in Northern Ireland. He claimed he'd seen terrorists kill people in Northern Ireland. It turned out he'd seen photographs of that.
Just a lot of lying.
A lot of mischaracterizing, yeah.
Why do liars and exhibitionists like O'Reilly and Donald Trump and Ann Coulter thrive in American culture? Why aren't the claims against them taken more seriously? Now, I ask you this knowing you're not responsible, but in a way you are. So what is going on?
So what I found really interesting about this whole O'Reilly episode was that after we had reported this, after all of these stories came out, O'Reilly gets a huge bump in viewership.
He said his ratings went up.
His ratings actually went up. Especially over in recent years, the United States has been an incredibly polarized political climate. And in that climate, people like Donald Trump, who's questioned the president's citizenship, have thrived. And you know, you've got a lot of people telling people what they want to hear, and that's why O'Reilly has so many viewers.
But why don't people rise up and... I mean, why are people so susceptible to their wily charms, so to speak? Like, why don't more people reject them after they've been found out for being liars and charlatans and all that sort of stuff?
Well, it's interesting. It's not just this isn't just on the right, it's on the left,
yeah,
too. And, you know, you have Fox News, you have MSNBC. And so I think you really have news coming from more and more biased sources. And, of course, I work for Mother Jones, which is a left-leaning publication. But, you know, we always go out of our way to, we've got our institutional perspective, but we always go out of our way to, you know, tell the truth and tell factual stories.
Which is good.
Which is what you want to do.
Why is that? Anyway, I know that you can't answer these questions. I don't know why that's such an anomaly, that's all. It's just bizarre to me. On Wednesday, this past Wednesday, April 8th, the Christian Science Monitor published an article entitled "How the Koch Brothers and the Super Rich Are Buying Their Way Out of Criticism." And among other things, it reported the following. When the Charles Koch Foundation pledges $1.5 million to Florida State University's Economics Department. It stipulates that a Koch-appointed advisory committee will select professors and undertake annual evaluations. Yeah, this is real. The Koch brothers now fund 350 programs at over 250 colleges and universities across America. You can bet that funding doesn't underwrite research on inequality and environmental justice. David Koch's $23 million of donations to public television earned him positions on the boards of two prominent public broadcasting stations. It also guaranteed that the documentary critical of the Kochs didn't air. The premise of the piece is that all these nonprofits and educational institutions are so cash-strapped that they will take money from literally anybody at any cost. And I'm curious, are the Koch brothers the leaders of this economic tyranny? Because it's ridiculous. All I've heard for like the last 10 years is these Koch brothers. I don't know anything about it. I just got your book, so I'm going to read it and figure this out. But I've read a lot about them. Why? Why can they do this?
So I'm going to take this in stages.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay.
It's a lot of information. This was the article and it just came out.
So first, I don't think they've actually
I
don't think they've bought their way out of criticism. Because, you know, they've been sort of politically toxic for a number of years. You know, David Koch can't even go to the theater in New York without getting, you know, booed and hissed there. So
still probably gets free popcorn, I bet. Sorry.
But the point about the universities is an interesting one. But it's, you know, I view it in a little bit of a different way. This is part of their long-term strategy to change the political culture in the United States. And they've done that through funding think tanks, funding advocacy groups. But Charles Koch is all about funding the next generation of thought leaders. Mm-hmm. And those are at universities. So this is very much part of their strategy to create programs in Austrian economics, free market economics, at universities across the country. Now, why are universities taking this money? I'm sure there are some universities that aren't, but I haven't seen many colleges turn down, you know, $1.5 million endowment. The real question is why universities are ceding control over their hiring decisions.
But the answer is money.
The answer is money. Yeah. In terms of the PBS, in terms of David Koch and PBS, PBS actually did air a documentary that was very critical of him. And after that, he decided to resign from the board of WNET in New York, which is his prerogative. One of the things that he's funded for many years is the science series Nova. So, but the one kind of contradiction here is that David Koch believes that PBS should not get public funding, and you know, yet he's a major supporter of this institution.
Okay, it's just, why didn't they, when I heard about all the energy and resources they were putting into Romney's campaigns and the Republican campaigns generally, why didn't they beat Obama? Why didn't they win that election? I don't understand.
In that race, it became a nuclear arms race money-wise, and so a lot of the negative ads just canceled themselves out. The Obama campaign also did something kind of smart in that they went after Americans for Prosperity, which is the Koch brothers' flagship advocacy group, early,
right,
and basically tied them to the Kochs. So, you know, I had people on the Obama campaign tell me, like, look, you know, we wanted every time somebody heard an Americans for Prosperity ad, you knew that there were two oil billionaires lurking behind it.
Right. Okay. So they were strategy.
It was strategic.
Strategy beat money in that instance. Okay. Do you watch House of Cards?
Yes.
What do you make of that? Don't cheer for the show. No, it's fine. I brought it up. No, you can cheer for the show. What do you make of House of Cards? Because everyone says, well, actually, there's split opinion about what we're really learning about actual Washington from this show, where the bisexual president pushes people in front of trains. Is that what your country is really like?
So what you're really asking me is how many people I pushed in front of trains.
Yes. No. What is this show telling us anything real? You're a Washington guy.
I love House of Cards. I'm not caught up on the full season. The last season with pushing people in front of trains. I mean,
sorry,
it's a,
spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Someone gets pushed in front of the train.
It's obviously a bit of a caricature. That said, Washington is very much a snake pit of ambition, and you do have these stereotypical people who live in and work there. The scandals may not be of the sort of cinematic magnitude of House of Cards, but you have, you know, Illinois Congressman Aaron Schock, who, you know, gets his office made over to look like Downton Abbey and is sort of using campaign contribution. You know, it's
this is true. Like, that's a true fact.
True fact.
Yeah. It's weird. So it's a weird place, basically.
It's very weird.
The whole point of House of Cards is Washington's kind of a weird place. And you're saying, yeah, it is kind of strange.
It is.
Okay. That's it in a nutshell. We are running out of time because Lee Reed has to go to Hamilton to play his record release show. But I want to say very quickly, or actually I want to ask you very quickly, what's your reading of the upcoming American presidential election? Can you briefly tell us, like, we hear that Hillary's going to announce via a video on Sunday or something?
Yes, it's interesting how all these campaigns are announcing that they're going to announce their announcement.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're in that season right now. I think you're going to have an interest.
Do you know how long a Canadian election cycle is?
How long?
It's like 8 days.
I mean,
they're just like, we're going to have an election next week. Sorry. That's what they say. Sorry, everyone. We're going to have an election in 8 days. Sorry. That's what they say. And then we have it, and we're like, oh, that sucked. That election sucked. Fuck. And then they have another one, and we're not happy as well. That's how it works in Canada. I just wanted you to know what we're like. But your country, it's like, yeah, an announcement for an announcement.
And then another 18 months of, you know, presidential, nonstop presidential election coverage. That's what it's going to be. My reading is, on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton's most likely going to be the Democratic bench is not very deep right now. On the Republican side, you do have a lot of strong candidates. I think a lot of people are predicting the sort of dynasty versus dynasty Bush v. Clinton election.
Right.
But the thing is, you know, there's a lot of conservatives who don't like Jeb Bush at all, who really don't think he's very conservative, and their candidate might be more of a Rand Paul type or Marco Rubio. So it'll be interesting to see how that
Rubio's
plays out.
Done.
You think he's done?
Yeah, we don't have time to talk about this, but I don't think he's gonna. No.
Well, okay, we'll talk about it later.
Yeah. You know what would be funny is if on Sunday, instead of Hillary Clinton dropping a video about her announcement, it's just the new Kanye West album. Just like secret drop, like we're just like, oh, it's the Kanye West album. This is actually better. Great. I think that's what's going to happen. It's going to be on YouTube. Once again, Dan Shulman's book is right here. It's called Sons of Wichita, How the Koch Brothers Became America's Most Powerful and Private Dynasty. It will be available in paperback via Grand Central Publishing, I believe, in May. And you can follow him on Twitter at Daniel Shulman. How about another hand for Dan Shulman, everybody? Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
Okay, as I say, when we return, a very special performance by Lee Reed. Stay where you are. Thank you, everybody. This episode is brought to you by Pizza Trocadero, the finest pizzeria in all of Guelph, Ontario. They've got delicious gourmet pizzas, or choose from an array of fresh ingredients and make whatever you like. Calzones, wings, panzerottis, salads, breadsticks, garlic bread. Pizza Trocadero has it all. You can find them at 7 Municipal Street in Guelph or visit them online at trocaderoguelph.ca. That's TrocaderoGuelph.ca. Call them at 519-829-2444 for pickup or delivery. That's Pizza Trocadero, a place of the good trade. We are back at Long Night, ladies and gentlemen. Our next guest is a gifted and politically outspoken hip-hop artist from Hamilton, Ontario, who once fronted the amazing group Warsaw Pack. He has just released his brand new album, The Butcher, The Banker, the Bitumen Tanker, and he's here to play a song from it. Please put your hands together for Lee Reed.
Thank you. So good.
Yeah. 1, 2, 1, 2. Yeah. This microphone kill fascists. It lit that match that don't build off their ashes. Rap to soundtrack the class clashes. Rip at the fabric of NASDAQ averages. Yes, microphone caused damages to white advantage in so-called Canada. Black the banner, mic like a cannon. Sights at Ramit, then fire on a management.
This is my microphone. There are many like it. This one is mine.
Yeah, my microphone will go AWOL on the Army, Air Forces, and Naval. Top floor for board table, same old, the total colonial control, A-holes and O. My microphone so painful for shameful bass, street player bankroll. Photo pose with the charity thankful. Mics at the banquet, ready to tango. Go, go, microphone go commando. Pros my ammo, roll with the vandal. Man pose the threat to white Anglo mantle. Mic like hammer, hit four right blammo. Man, man, microphone so adamant. Tone so mad at them, spit shot shatter. Talk shit, they rattle them. Strong stratagem. Bomb scattered, a mic on battle them.
This is my microphone. There are many like it, but this one is mine.
Yeah, my microphone is a feministic flow, the venom in men's rights membership. Upsetless letters to the editor, my pen's unfettered. Mic's a vendetta, shit, shit. My microphone is a weapon, form of aggression is born of oppressors like boards and senators, banks and creditors, men a lender and stock and investor. Market gesture, I spark unrest. Talk to block party rock for the oppressed. Mic projects it for the boycott divest. Your boy got no rest, just destroys and wrecks it. Shit, stomp your prison complex and storm they nest, score they war chests and block they test for toxic pipe mess. Mic talk blessed and inspire resistance.
This is my microphone. There are many like it, but this one is mine. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Spurfest. Thank you, Vish.
Lee Reed, everybody. Lee Reed, make some noise. That was this microphone from this record, which is available for sale tonight. It is called The Butcher, The Banker, The Bitumen Tanker, and you can get it at the merch table or see Lee directly. Lee Reed came from Hamilton. The night he's celebrating the release of this record. What time are you on tonight?
Probably not till about 12:30. So.
Oh, you'll be fine.
We'll be fine.
All right, thank you for coming. Ladies and gentlemen, that's our show. We did it. We did the show. Thanks for being here. Thanks to all our guests and the Long Night crew, the Spur Festival. If you like, you can follow me on Twitter, at Vish Khanna, and my podcast, which all of you are on, actually. How about a hand for you? You're on the show. At Vish Creative is the podcast Twitter. And that's it. We'll see you next time. Good night, everybody. Thank you. We'll talk soon. Hey, thanks again for checking out Creative Control with Vish Khanna. You can email me about the show at creativecontrol933@gmail.com. That's creative with a K, control with a K, 933@gmail.com. You can also follow our Twitter at Vish Creative, V-I-S-H-K-R-E-A-T-I-V-E. And you can also like our Facebook page. A version of this show airs on CFRU in Guelph every Wednesday at noon Eastern. And you can listen to that online at CFRU.ca, or if you're in the KW region, at 93.3 FM in Guelph. You can also sign up for the weekly mailing list for the podcast and the show at vishkana.com, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. I believe that is everything I wanted to tell you. Thank you once again.